All right, so we are holding on Chuk Zayin on the base, two lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of the story of Tfilas Avos Rishus, the machlokes between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel, where Rabbi Gamliel has been very overbearing towards Rabbi Yeshua, and the people protested, and they said, we're going to have to fire, we're going to have to fire Rabbi Gamliel and appoint somebody else. And by the way, there's a sefer on Jewish history called Derus HaRishonim, where he has a long, long discussion about all the ins and outs of the story and many different details of it. One thing he points out, you have over here, we said that we said the people cried out, and they said to Chutzpah Samachogim and Amod, meaning of what he says, that it was the common people over there who protested and made him stop and are the one, and then saying, you know, how long are we going to tolerate this, what Rabbi Gamliel was doing to Rabbi Yeshua. The Chachamim, had it been just up to them, would have been willing to let it slide a little longer. Look, I mean, they understand why Rabbi Gamliel was doing it, but once they saw that the people already are protesting and, you know, kind of like Rabbi Gamliel has lost their confidence, then already, you know, they realize we have no choice. And the whole point is the Nasi is supposed to be respected by the whole Jewish people. If he's not going to be, then we have no choice. We're going to have to see about replacing him.
It's a classic case of the Chayim being started when there's something...
In other words, the Chachamim realized why Rabbi Gamliel was doing it. You have to realize, we're not talking some politicians here or something, Chas v'Shalom. We are talking about Tzaddikim. They understood why Rabbi Gamliel is doing what he's doing,
over
that he has... They realize he has reason to do it. He has reason to... Because each time it happens, you have to deal with it. But the Chachamim on their own wouldn't necessarily have gone, at least not to the extent... certainly not to the extent of deposing Rabbi Gamliel, but once they saw that the people are already protesting and Rabbi Gamliel has lost their confidence and they're not going to respect him anymore, then we have no choice. Okay, then we need a new Nasi because we need somebody that the people are going to respect. Otherwise, what's the purpose of the Nasi? Okay. So also the Omruba. So we said the last thing we said was that they picked Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as the new candidate because he has all the advantages. He's a Chacham, so this way anything they ask him in the Bismedrish, he can answer right on the spot. He's rich, so that way if he needs to go and he needs to go and represent the Jewish people by the emperor and pay bribes and tributes and whatnot, then he'll be able to do it. And he's the 10th generation of Ezra, so he has Chus Avos, so therefore Rabbi Gamliel comes to closest. So therefore, Rabbi Gamliel is not going to be able to. Even if Rabbi Gamliel gets angry at him for the insult and tries to bring down punishment Min HaShemayim on him, then it's Chus Avos will protect him. Okay. Fine. So he's the new king. Hold on. We're only in the middle of the story. Yeah. Also, the Omrule. So they came and told Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Nichale Lamar de la Heavy Ration Sifta. Do you want? Yeah, there's more than that. Also, for Omrule, so they came and told him, Nichale Lamar de la Heavy Ration Sifta. Would you like to be the new Ration Sifta, the new Nasi? So he says to them, Ezel the Emlich the Enshi Beisi. Let me go consult with the members of my household, meaning his wife. You're going to do such an important step. You got to first check with the boss, as they say. Although there are actually a couple of interesting things that Mepharshim say. Why indeed does he have to particularly check with his wife? The Rabbi Yonasan Agashitz brings an interesting thing. He brings from some source. We know that people who have different jobs have different frequencies of oina. You have, for example, a person who's living off a trust fund is owner every day, a worker is one is a couple of times a week, a Chacham is one is once a week, et cetera, et cetera. He brings there that a Nasi's, the frequency of a Nasi's owner is less than for a regular Talmud Chacham. So you have to check with his wife whether she's going to give permission for that. Okay. Another explanation I saw also is Kohenim, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a Kohen. Kohenim tend to be very sharp-tempered. So he was wondering to himself, well, am I tackle like that? In that case, I might not make a good Nasi. So he figures, let me consult with my wife. She'll be able to tell the truth whether I am or not. Okay, anyway.
Was
no, apparently not. Kohen could be. Very often, Kohenim, there's a certain stereotype, and there's a certain truth there that Kohenim are short-tempered. It comes up in Halacha as well. It's the reason why the Chachamim is said in Bava Basra. It talks about the Chachamim made up a complicated kind of get called a get mekusher for Kohenim who are threatening to divorce their wives. This way, by the time they prepare the thing, the guy will cool off.
All
the folding and bending and twisting and nodding and whatever. Levim, apparently not so much. No, let's go. Okay. Also, the Emlich b'dzeisu, so he went to talk it over with his wife. The Emlich means he went to ask advice.
Yeah, but what's
the Shurdish is the Shurdish. Mem lamed chof in Aramaic means to take advice. Nesama, Melech is called that because he has to take advice from his advisors. I don't know. Anyway. Also, the Emlich b'dzeisu, so he went and consulted with his wife. Amrulay, so she says to him, why should you take the job? Dilma Abrinlach, what if they end up firing you as well? Amrulah, so he says to her, so here you have actually, Rashi takes out, Rashi has a girsa over here that takes out a couple of lines that were in the that were in older manuscripts of the Gemara before him, which is, he tells her, Malim Bakodesh Vole Meridin. And then she says to him, what if Rabbi Gamliel gets angry at you and calls down on you punishment in Hashemayim? And then he gives her the answer to you in the Gemara. Rashi takes those two lines out, apparently because, what do you mean, Malim Bakodesh Lemirid, and they just fired Rabbi Gamliel. What prevents them from firing Rabbi Lazar? And Marshall says we should maybe have them in because, okay, you know, listen, Rabbi Gamliel, they're firing for cause, basically. Rabbi Lazar and Azariah, you know, the whole point is that, not necessarily is things going to come to such a point where they're going to need to fire him. So he says, in that case, the rule is Malim Bakodesh Lemirid, as we'll see at the end of the story what they ended up doing. Okay.
Connections.
That's not the point. Rabbi Gamliel also had connections. That's not the point. Connections are important.
Doesn't have the same amount of connections.
No. We didn't say that at all. We said Rabbi Akiva didn't have chus avos. Therefore, in Shemayim, if it comes to a battle, beruchnius, between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva, then Rabbi Akiva is going to be in the worst position because he doesn't have chus avos. Rabbi Gamliel has chus avos. He's descended from Hillel. He's descended from David HaMelech. Anyway, let's go on. Amrullah, so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah tells her, you know, it's like the expression, L'shtamish inish yom echad b'kasa d'mokra, let a person have the opportunity to use for one day of crystal cut, or l'macho litva, and even if the next day it's going to get broken, you had the chance to use it for one day. So the same thing, it's worth it being the Nazi, even if it's only for a short-term thing. Even if they end up firing me, at least you have that.
That's what he answers
one. Amrullah, so she says to him, L'slach chivarta, but you have no white hair. So therefore, it's droy that a person who is giving a drosha for the whole tzibur, who is representing the whole tzibur, should have a white beard, should look old.
He was young.
He was 18 years old at the time. Actually, Yerushalmi, when it tells this story, says he was 16. Yeah. A nest happened to him. 18 rows of white hair grew in his beard. So all of a sudden, now he looks old, and therefore he looks distinguished enough to be the Nazi. He's the one. This is what he meant. The Mishnah at the end of the first parak, which we say in the Haggadah, he wasn't literally 70, but he looked like 70 because he had white hair. This is the famous thing that everyone brings in his notes on Haggadah, that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a Gilgal of Shmuel HaNavi who lived to be 52, so 52 plus 18 equals 70. So he had 70 years of accomplishment under his belt. In this Gilgal, he only had 18, but altogether, including what his neshama had accomplished in his previous Gilgal, he tacked had 70. We learn in a braisa. On that day, when they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, they took away the guard by the gate. They gave permission to all the Talmidim to come into the Beit Medrash. Why?
Who has to do it?
The new Nasi, yeah. Why? This was a change from the previous policy, because Rabbi Gamliel's policy was he used to announce and say, call Talmud, any Talmud who's inside is not like his outside, should not come into the Beit Medrash. So therefore, he had a guard over there, Pashut, to give the Pashut, to give people an entrance exam and see whether they're Teichik Kibarei. Although there is a Chassidish of art that how does the guard tell whether Teichik Kibarei? If they're pushing their way to get into the Beit Medrash, then you know that Teichik Kibarei. Anyway, but Rabbi Gamliel had that guard over there. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah doesn't hold that. So indeed, Hahu Yoma on that day, on that day, many new benches were added to the Beis Medrash because all of a sudden you have a huge influx of Talmidim, so they need room for them. How many were added? Amar Yechonon, Pligi by Abba Yosef and Destoy by Rabbanon. Abba Yosef and Destoy and Rabbanon disagree how many benches were added. Chad Amar Itosfu Arbameh Safsali, Chad Amar Shvameh Safsali. One says that 400 benches were added and the other one says 700.
That's a big
base. So it's a big base measure, yeah. Rabbi Gamliel felt bad when he saw that so many Talmidim came in, so now he's worried, the Rashi says, he might be punished in Hashemayim, that in his time, while he was Nazi, he prevented all these prospective Talmidim from coming and learning Torah. That's a pretty serious thing. Omar, he says to himself, that's what we're saying, right? He had a guard over there. So all these 400 or 700 new benches full of Talmidim were all people who previously had applied to join the yeshiva, and Rabbi Gamliel had turned them down because they were not Tosha Tabaroi. And now all of a sudden they're coming in and they're learning Torah and I'm going to be all concerned. What did I do? Chas v'shalom, Yoma, chas v'shalom, a 90 Torah in Israel. Did I chas v'shalom prevent that Jewish people are going to be learning Torah? What happened? Achzulay b'chelme. That night he was shown in a dream, chatzli chivri demalion kitma. He was shown white. He was shown white barrels that were full of ashes. A white barrel looks very nice on the outside, but the inside of it is full of ashes, which are not terribly useful. In fact, actually, I think Ben Yehoyada says the difference is, like, dirt at least fine. It has, you know, it has a future. You can grow things in it. Ashes, you can't even really grow anything in. So, like, it shows, you know, nothing much is going to come of these people. However, the Gemara says, Veloyhi, actually, it wasn't so. At least some of these Talmidim were going to develop into something. They showed him that Min HaShemayim in order to make him feel better. In order that, what's going on? So now there is. The Gemara talks about in a number of places that you're not allowed, as Gemara mentions in Kulin, for example, you're not supposed to teach Torah to a Talmud she'enei hogun, a Talmud who doesn't have good midas. You have to first get him to have good midas, then you teach him Torah. So in that case, then what's the argument between Rav Gamliel and Rav Elazar ben Azariah? So there's a lot of possibilities. One of them is that you have, there can be a difference. There's a person, his midas are not quite where they should be, but at least he's on the way. So maybe you accept him. So in certain cases, then the din is, and this is brought into Chacham Torah. You accept him and you teach him as you go along to develop good midas and to develop into a mensch. You also, where so that might have been in the difference. Rav Gamliel feels that some of these people are not at the level yet where he can do that. First, they need to improve themselves, then he can teach them. And Rav Elazar ben Azariah says the other way around. You could also have the question, for example, what do we say? The stem. We don't know whether a person is hogun or not. Do we assume he is or not? Rav Gamliel is going to say that no, we have to have evidence that he's hogun before we're going to teach him. And Rav Elazar ben Azariah says, min hastam, a yid has a cheskes kashrus, and we can accept him and assume that he's hogun. There are many, many other explanations. One other interesting one is, we know it says a Talmud Chacham is supposed to have shmini shebishminis of gaiva. So therefore, what's the verdict? If you have people who have a little bit of gaiva, Rav Gamliel holds, like the opinions in the Gemara and Sota there, that say, lo yinev lem tase, a Talmud Chacham is not supposed to have gaiva at all, so therefore he doesn't want him in. Whereas Rav Elazar ben Azariah says, look, there are opinions, they can have shmoni shebishminis of shminis, so therefore they're entitled to come in.
A fraction
means 164, yeah. Yeah, there's a famous vort from the Vilna Gaon on it that says the eighth pasuk of the eighth parasha in the Torah is Vayishlach. The eighth pasuk of it is Kaptainti. That's the kind of gaiva that Thomas Chacham should have. Kaptainti and Kolach. Okay, anyway, going on. Tana, we learn in a brayse. Adius boi b'yoyim nishnes. Masech the Adius was taught on that day. And in fact, the chol heichadam minut boi b'yoyim ahu yoyim ahava. In fact, whenever in Shas, whenever we say that something was taught boi b'yoyim, it actually does sound like something on the pocket. Any time that it says in Shas that something was taught boi b'yoyim, it means it took place on that day. V'loy hoisa, by the way, Hadoris Hadoshonim, in his discussion of the whole thing, says, based on various lines of evidence, including from the rest of our story over here, that boi b'yoyim doesn't literally mean it all happened on one day. It means a period of time. There was a period of time after the Elazar ben Azariah was appointed Nasi when all this was going on. There was not a single halacha in the Beit Medrash that was still pending, where they hadn't come to a conclusion, where they didn't explain it that day. Because now that you had all these new Talmidim over there, now they were able to learn on a much more thorough level, because you have the different people are now able to come and give edus and be able to give actual examples where halacha was decided such and such. But after, in fact, you have there's a Mishnah in Zvachim that mentions the 72 Zkenim that were there when they appointed Rav Elazar ben Azariah as Nasi. So that's the vote. In other words, Doris HaRishonim has learned that up until that point, you didn't have all the Chachamim in the Beit Medrash because they were afraid of the Romans. Now, when they have to appoint Rav Elazar, when they have to vote on Rav Elazar ben Azariah's appointment, all of them have to be there. So therefore, you had much of the Romans actually didn't. The upshot, as he says, the Romans eventually found out about it, and therefore the Sanhedrin was forced to leave Yavne. Anyway, the point is that
the Romans didn't want to be there, or there were skins the Romans might
have. Usually, up until that point, they were afraid of what the Romans are going to do if they all gather together. So usually, they only have like a skeleton crew on hand. You have the important ones, Rav Gamliel, Rav Yeshua, Rav Akiva, etc., are there, but many of the other Chachamim weren't there on a regular basis. Just in case, that, and also because the Romans might suspect that they're all plotting together or something. But now, when they have to vote on Rav Elazar ben Azariah, they all have to be there, so therefore they have much more of an opportunity to finally clarify make points in halacha. And the Gemara continues, after Rav Gamliel, like Mona Asmin, they submitted Shakur the Shah Akam. In fact, even Rav Gamliel, even though he had just been deposed, you'd think he'd be insulted, he'd stay home or whatever, he didn't stay away from the Beit Medrash for even a moment. He's not Nasi anymore, he's Stam one of the Chachamim, doesn't matter, he's still gonna stay there and participate.
Let's think about how he took the news.
It doesn't say, but apparently, yeah. Ditzman, as we see in a Mishnah in Masechta, we see in a Mishnah in Masechta Yadayim, Boy Bayoim, on that day, and we just said Boy Bayoim refers to these events, Boy Yehuda Ger Ammon, his name, the Beis Medrash. Yehuda, that was his name, a Ger from Ammon, came to the Beis Medrash, Omalahem, and he asked them, Ma ani lova v'kohol, am I allowed to marry into the Jewish people? We know the Torah says, Lo Yove Ammon, Yom Yove V'kal Hashem, so what's the din about me? Amalei Ram Gamliel also after love of a call. So Ram Gamliel says you also. So you see, Ram Gamliel was there. Amalei Rabbi Yeshua Mutter after love of a call. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you are allowed to. Amalei Ram Gamliel Valet Vanem. No, this is the same Rabbi Yeshua and the same Ram Gamliel.
There's
no question. No, but that's arguing in halacha, which fine. That's Vahiv Basufa. In the end, they become friends, as we'll see in the continuation of the story. But yeah, so the point is, Ram Gamliel is just participating as a regular member of the Medrash. The pasuk says, "A ger from Ammon and Moab is not allowed to marry in." What are you talking about? You think Ammon and Moab still live in the same place as they did before? All of Sancheirav Melech Asher, Sancheirav, the king of Asher, hundreds of years ago, back in the time of the first business, which already came, built all of Kolomis, and he mixed up all the nations. We know that's what he did to the Aseret HaShevatim, that he took them into Golos and instead brought people from Bavel and Kusa and what have you, and settled them in Eretz Yisrael. He did that to all the countries he'd conquer. He would take the people of that place and exile them someplace else, and then bring people from someplace else. The purpose of it is exactly to make them uncomfortable this way. They're not going to be so quick to rebel against him because they haven't yet settled in. They don't know all the ins and outs. They don't know the language. If they're coming there, they're still speaking their same language, but they don't know all the ins and outs of the place. They don't know all the secret hiding places. They don't know all the strategic places and whatever yet. Shenema, as the pasuk says, in the pasuk, and Yishaya quotes a boast of Sancheirav about what he accomplished. He says, "V'osu gvulei samim, I removed the boundaries of the nations, v'asi deisehem sheisehi, and I ruined their futures, v'oded kabir yoshvim, and I brought down huge numbers of settlers." So we see that's what he did. He mixed up all the nations. And therefore, says Rabbi Yeshua, so therefore the people who are living in the territory of Ammon and Moab now are not descendants of the original Ammonim and Moabim from the times of the Torah. Instead, they're from other nations. They might be from Ammon and Moab. Doesn't matter. We're called the Parish, Merov, a Parish. We have a general rule that you go according to the Roiv. Roiv of the nations and Roiv of the Goyim in the world are not from Ammon and Moab. Therefore, this Yehuda is allowed. Called the Parish, anything that separates Merov, a Parish. We assume it's separated from the majority. So in other words, you have, put it in modern terms, right? You have 7 billion goyim in the world. Of them, maybe, let's say, half a billion, maybe, are descendants of Ammon and Moab, if you were to trace back the family trees. Okay, but the roiv, 6.5 billion or not. Therefore, you can go according to that.
Again, it's 1.5.
Yeah. Amalurim Gamliel Valik Vanet.
He
said he's from the territory of Ammon. Doesn't mean that he knows that he has family trees tracing him back in. Yeah. But the Pasuk says, the Pasuk in Yirmiyah, that afterwards I'll return the captivity of Ammon, says Hashem, they already returned. So then, okay, there was a period of time when Sancheirav took them into Golos, but then Hashem brought them back to their country. Why not? Because Hashem says that he's going to. Because Hashem has a purpose for each nation in the world. Each nation has something in the world that they can that they're able to accomplish. So in fact, it's brought in Sfarim. This is why you find that the Nevi'im cried and then mourned and whatever when one of the Goyish nations is destroyed. You have Nevuos about Moab and Ammon and various other nations where the Navi says, I cry and I moan for it. So one thing is, partially because they're human beings, they're creations of Hashem, even if they were Rishayim. But one idea of it is because every nation has something unique that Hashem put them in the world to accomplish, and the fact that that's not going to happen anymore because that nation was destroyed or scattered or what have you is something to moan about. And you also have a pasuk in Amos that says Hashem says I'll return the captivity of my people Yisrael. We're not back yet. So what makes you think that the promise about Ammon has already come true? So Rabbi Yeshua beat Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel had to agree that Rabbi Yeshua is right. Miyad hitiruhu love the kahal. Right away they voted on it and they decided that Yehuda is allowed to marry into the kahal. Amar Rav Gamliel, so now Rav Gamliel says to himself, Hoyo v'hochi haba, given that it was like that, we see actually that the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua. That shows he has special siyata d'shmaya to be able to come to a conclusion of the halacha is v'ashem imo, shalacha kaboisi, b'chol mokim. It shows that he's a Baal Madrega. So therefore, so I was wrong then in that case to cause him all that trouble. Let me go and appease Rabbi Yeshua and ask him the same. So he must have when he came to Rabbi Yeshua's house. This is, by the way, one of Doris Rishonim's proofs that this story happened over a long period of time. Because if it's all on one day, Rabbi Yeshua is right there in the Beit Medrash. We just said they finished the discussion. He doesn't have to first go to Rabbi Yeshua's house. But this was all taking place over a period of a long time, maybe as much as 2 years. So therefore, finally, yeah. So he goes to Rabbi Yeshua's house. He comes to his house. He sees that the walls of Rabbi Yeshua's house are black. So he says to him, based on what I see from the walls of your house, I see that you work with charcoal. So either it means he makes charcoal, or it means he works with something with charcoal. The Yerushalmi, when it tells over the story, Rashi brings both explanations. It means he either makes charcoal, or he's a smith who uses charcoal and melting metal. The Yerushalmi says the second one. The Yerushalmi says he made needles. That was his panacea.
In other words,
the walls are covered with soot. From the from yeah. Omer lo, Rabbi Yeshua says, "Oy loy l'dor sha'at ha'parnos." Say, woe to the generation that you're their leader. All this time, you don't know the tzaras from the chachamim, what they do for parnos, what they do to be able to eat. Like now, you're first discovering that I have to work at such a menial job, at such a degrading job for a living. I talk, and you didn't know it all this time. And how many other tamid chachamim are there that you don't know? Because he felt that Rabbi Gamliel was still kind of coming to insult him, or at least that he felt that Rabbi Gamliel was not being sensitive enough. That, you know, what do you mean you first discovered now? This is the kind of thing that you as a nasi, you have to make it your job to know about all the chachamim. Okay. Amalai, so Rabbi Gamliel said to him, "Nan Nesiloch, you're right. I spoke too much to you. I spoke out of turn. M'choili be moichomi." Loy Ashkachbe, but Rabbi Yeshua did not pay attention to him and was not ready to be moichomi. Then Rabbi Gamliel, 1 second, Rabbi Gamliel says, "Asay b'shvil kvod Abba, do it for the sake of the kavod of my father or of my ancestors." So either it means his father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, or it means his ancestors going back to Hillel. Then immediately Rabbi Yeshua accepted the mechila, and now everything's over. There's actually the Nimuka Yosef says there's 17 different lessons you can learn from all the details of the story. And one of them is that a Talmid Chacham shouldn't be so quick to forgive, because after all, you know, he has to consider the covet of the Torah when he's actually considering the covet of the Torah. We're not necessarily talking about nowadays where a person says covet of Torah and really means his own covet, but whatever. On the other hand, you have to be ready to know for when it's appropriate. Okay, so now that they made up, Omru, so now the Chachamim said, "Man nezel v'neim lehu l'rabbanon," who's going to tell the Rabbanon that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua have made up, and it's time to make some changes. Omru, how koibes ano azilma. So a certain laundryman said, "I will go and tell." He volunteered to go bring the news. Shalach lu Rabbi Yeshua le Beit Medrash. So Rabbi Yeshua sent to the Beit Medrash with this laundryman the following message. Man de lovish mada, the one who up until this point has worn the outfit, the uniform, which represents the special clothes of the nasi, yilbash mada, he should continue to wear the uniform. Or man de lovish mada, the one who has not up until now been regularly wearing the uniform, yevale man de lovish mada shlach mada fano albashe. Does he have the right to say to the one who usually wears the uniform, take off the uniform because I'm going to wear it? In other words, the nimshol was the uniform, the special honorable clothes belong to the nasi, who's descended from Malchus Beis David, like the royal robes. So therefore, it's not right that we should have Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah continuing to be the nasi when Rabbi Gamliel is supposed to have the job, because he's the one who has it for generations already.
But they both came from
Yidon. No. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we said, was a kohen. He was descended from Ezra. In fact, Marsha says, part of the message was, when you get down to it, the Malchus is reserved only for Malchus Beis David. It's only reserved for the descendants of David. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not from the descendants of David. He's a Kohen, so he really doesn't belong in the job.
What's the reason
about this? Because once Hashem promised it to David, then it remains in his descendants forever. That's what Hashem decided. To be the Melech, and then the Nasi. The Nasi is kind of stands in the place of the Melech. You have, for example, a Gemara in Hodias, where Rebbe says, if we were to be living in the times of the Beis Mikdash, if I were to do an Aveira, would I be bringing a korban like a king does rather than like a commoner does? Am I considered a Nasi to that extent? And Rebbe Chiya tells him no, only because there's a Reish Kavusa in Babel, and he kind of outranks you, but in other words, if not for that, then yes, then you see him. And Eretz Yisrael are considered like a melech. Either ruled over by the Romans, that doesn't matter. We're talking about internally within the Jewish people, who's the highest authority.
Because he's Michael, then you have to make him back to us.
The Bashas, that's what we're going to send Ketria.
Okay.
So when this message came to the Beis Medrash, Omulahu Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbanim, Troiku Galu. So Rabbi Akiva says to the Chachamim, lock the gates. We don't want the servants of Rav Gamliel are going to come and harass us. In other words, he didn't know that Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel, he didn't know from this message that Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua had made up, that Rav Gamliel asked Mechila by Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yeshua had accepted. So as far as he knew, Rav Gamliel was starting to now, decide, you know, I want them to see us back and I'm going to force the issue. So first, he's sending this message, and if he doesn't, and if they don't listen to the message, then he's going to take stronger steps. So Rabbi Akiva says, never mind that, we'll decide it on our own. We're not having Rav Gamliel servants come and harass us into a decision. Doris HaRishonim learns that actually what it means is, this is what the Gemara means. This is the simple meaning of the Gemara. Doris HaRishonim learns it a little differently. He says that this is at a previous time. Rabbi Akiva had said, you know, we should be keeping the gates locked regularly because we don't know what Rav Gamliel's servants are going to come do. So therefore, when this Kovas comes with his message, he can't even get in to give the message. Okay, anyway, that's according to Doris HaRishonim. The simple meaning of the Gemara, he came and delivered the message, and Rabbi Akiva says, it means that Rabbi Gamliel apparently is going to start an effort now to get back his job. We're going to decide that on our own. We're not going to be forced into it by him and his servants. Rabbi Akiva is one of the heads of the Chachamim. He has the right to decide it. The Chachamim in general, all the Chachamim there are going to vote on it. Okay, wait, I'll be sure.
But should Rabbi Gamliel impose...
Apparently not. Amar Rav Yeshua, Mutav de Eikum ve'ezel anol gabayos. So Rav Yeshua says, okay, you know what? Let me better go to them. They didn't get through. I'll go. Also Torah Chavava. So he goes and knocks on the door. Amar Lahu, and he says to them a message like this: Mazeh ben Mazeh Yazeh. When you have a Kohen who sprinkles Parah Adruma water, and he was a Kohen, he's the son of a Kohen, who also, in his time, sprinkled Parah Adruma water, Yazeh, he deserves to be the one who now is sprinkling Parah Adruma water. V'she'ene ben Mazeh, v'loy ben Mazeh. On the other hand, if you have somebody who's not himself, wasn't somebody who sprinkled, and say his father was not somebody who sprinkled, Yom of Mazeh ben Mazeh, would he have the right to tell to the Kohen who hereditary in his descent, in his family, has been doing Parah Adruma water, Me'mecha, Me'ma'or, that your water is not real Mayim Chayim, which is kosher for Parah Adruma, it's just water from a cave, which is possible, because it's stagnant water, and your ashes are not really ashes of Parah Adruma, they're stamped ashes from something burned. In other words, same idea, similar idea to the previous message. In other words, the one who had this job as a hereditary thing should continue in it. And not Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who doesn't have it as a hereditary thing. Marsha points out the first one was meant to talk about that Rav Gamliel, who's descended from Beis David, who wore the royal robes, should continue to. The second message is saying, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah should go back to his job. He's a Kohen. His job is to be a Kohen, not to be a Nazi. So there's two messages. The job of a Kohen, it was like after the Churban, fine, but a Kohen still eats Truma, a Kohen still teaches people Torah, or whatever, fine, but it's fine. It was after the Churban. There's no more Avodah, but the point is, in other words, the second Churban. Second Churban, this is, yeah. So, okay, fine, but nevertheless, the fact is that he doesn't belong in this job. So the two messages complemented each other. One was to say the one from Beis David should remain in the position of Nasi, and the other was to say the Kohen should remain in the position of a Kohen. So now that Rabbi Yeshua himself said it, Amalei Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua, Nisayasta, so Rabbi Akiva says, Rabbi Yeshua, okay, you've been appeased, I see you've accepted Rabbi Gamliel's Mechila, that you yourself are coming to argue for him to be returned to his job. Okay, Kluma Sinu Elo B'Shvil Kvaydecha, look, the whole reason we did this thing in the first place was only because of your covenant. So tomorrow morning, you and I will go together and go early to his door like you do to an important person, like you do, for example, to a king or a Nasi or whatever, and that'll be our way of showing that we accept him as Nasi again. By going early in the morning to his door.
So basically, those two can decide.
The other Chachamim still have to vote on it, but in other words, yeah, they're going to be the primary ones. Amri, so now the Chachamim said, okay, we're going to have Rav Gamliel back as Nasi, but Heichi Nevid, what are we going to do? Na'abre, should we fire Rav Elazar ben Azariah? Can't. As we said before, Gemuri Malan Rakodesh Vein Meridin. The fact is, you're supposed to only raise things in Kedusha, not lower them.
He told his wife.
Yeah, like he told, exactly. Well, we didn't have it in our Girsa. It was an older Girsa of the Gemara that Marsha keeps in. But yeah, the point is, yeah, Malam HaKadosh Vlamirid, and you only raise the Kadosh, you don't lower. So therefore, we shouldn't fire Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah without a good reason. Nidrash Mar Chadashavta or Mar Chadashavta, should we say from now on we'll have the alternate weeks, so Gamliel will be the Rosh Hashiva for 1 week and Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah the next week? Can't also the Kanuya. It's going to cause jealousy because Rebbe Gamliel is going to feel like, why am I, who have the Nasius hereditary for generations, why am I on an equal level with Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, who's a newcomer?
Well, the real, on the other hand, that he's giving up his.
Okay, but still, Ella Lidrishim Gamliel Tlos the Shabbos, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah for the Shabbos. So they made the rule that from now on, Rabbi Gamliel will be the Rosh Hashiva and will darshan in public 3 Shabbosim out of every month, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah the 4th one. Different gear say it says here on the side is 2 and 1. Whatever. The point is, Rabbi Gamliel is going to have more than Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Thus we find in a different Gemara, we find that one time Rabbi Yeshua asked the Talmud, a couple of Talmudim of his, he came to visit, the Gemara in Chagiga, he asked them, so what's going on in the Beis Medrash, Shabbos Shel Mihoy, so whose Shabbos was it to Darshan? And then they told him it was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's Shabbos. So we see that there was this concept that for a period where you had to know, you wouldn't automatically know who's darshaning on Shabbos. You wouldn't know because you would have to know. You'd have to know whether it was the second, whether it was the first or second week, or whether it was the third week, whether it's the first, second. You could lose track if you weren't there for a while. If you weren't there for a while, yeah, you'd lose track. Okay. Who was the Talmud who started the whole thing? Well, it's the Talmud who asked the question, Trilof Avis Rishosa Yechoyva, Rav Shimon Ben Yechoyahaba, that was none other than Rav Shimon Ben Yechoy.
Why is it bringing down after?
So one reason is because when we were mentioning before all the negative things that came out of it, how Rav Gamliel was deposed, and there's the whole machlokas, and we didn't want to mention Rav Shimon at that point. Now that it came to a successful conclusion and everything went good again, now we can say that it was Rav Shimon Ben Yechoy. He was the one who asked if Philip Abbas or Shul Seichaiva. He belongs to the next generation of Tanoim. He was a Talmud of Rebbe Akiva. So at the time over here, Mistami, he was a young Talmud, and he came to ask the question. Okay.
So the story ends.
That's the story ends there. The right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now he was already an older person, the Rebbe Shimon Gamliel.
Rebbe Gamliel, we're talking about over here.
Rebbe Gamliel.
Yeah,
It says after he came, after he passed away, then.
So after he passed away, they appointed Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah to finish out his term at Nasi. Yeah. Then temporarily he became full Nasi. Yeah, it's mentioned there someplace around there. Okay. We said in the Mishnah of a Shamu Stopin Kolayot. We said that you can daven Musa all day, and Rabbi Yehuda said only until 7 hours in the day. Rabbi Yehuda of Nikra Pesheya. Nonetheless, if a person davens Musa after 7 hours of the day, he's called a Pesheya. He's called that he's careless. Because the fact of the matter is, in the Beis Mikdash, when they brought a Korban Musaf, they would finish bringing it by the end of the 7th hour. So what are you doing delaying the tefillah beyond that time?
Yeah.
Okay. Turn it up on him. You learn in a braisa. How you the fun of shtei tefillahs? If a person has in front of him, he has 2 tefillahs that he has to yet daven. We learned about this yesterday. We were discussing in connection with the question when, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the time for Musaf ends. So a person has a situation where he has 2 tefillahs to daven. Achas from mincha, achas from Musaf. He has mincha and he has Musaf. So we said that could according to the Chachamim, that could happen any time during the afternoon from mincha gola until the end of the day. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it could happen between 6.5 and 7 hours of the day, because 6.5 begins mincha and 7 begins Musaf. 7 ends Musaf. So what do you do? Which one do you daven first? Mispalo shom mincha v'achaka. Mispalo shom Musaf. First you daven mincha. Then Musaf, shezu tadira v'zu eina tadira. Because mincha is more common. You daven mincha every day. Musaf, you only daven on special days. Rabbi Yehuda, mispalo shom Musaf v'achaka mispalo shom mincha. Rabbi Yehuda says you daven first Musaf, then mincha. Shezu mitzvah iveres. Because Musaf, soon deadline is going to come. You're going to have it 7 hours. You can't daven Musaf anymore. V'zu mitzvah she'ene iveres. Whereas mincha is not so quick to end, because you still have hours left to daven. Now, so how does that work? So Tosfos mentions over here a couple of things in that. First of all, it means, therefore, Tosfos says, on Yom Kippur, let's say, when the davening is going very long, you should be careful to finish Shacharis before 6.5 hours a day, before Mincha time, because otherwise, as we're saying over here, you would have to daven Mincha first, Tosfos said. Then, on the other hand, Tosfos continues, you don't necessarily need to do that. Because what are we talking about over here, Tosfos says? The situation we're trying, this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. The situation we're talking about where you should daven mincha and then Musaf, let's say, for example, a person is in a situation where he's not going to have time to daven both of them. Let's say, for example, not five minutes before. Let's say, for example, Tosfos says, let's say he's going to go, let's say, to a wedding or something. He's concerned he's going to be in the meal over there. He's going to get involved in it. He's going to forget about davening. He's going to get drunk. He only has time before that for one tefillah. So then let him daven mincha. So he's not going to be able to daven mincha bismana. So he has to daven both. So then he should daven mincha, and later on, if he has time, he'll do musa. But in the normal situation, where after musa, he'll still have time for mincha. So we are talking about it late in the day. Let's say so he's not going to have time for mincha later on because he's going to be at the wedding meal and whatever. He's going to be getting drunk over there. So therefore, he may not be able to daven mincha later. Then mincha comes first. But in the normal situation, where he has time for musaf and he has time for mincha, then let him do it in the proper order: musaf then mincha. That's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. In addition, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings another opinion that this whole concept applies only biyachid. It doesn't apply to tzibur because the tzibur you don't want people to get mixed up. If you daven mincha before musaf, they're going to think it's a regular thing that you should always do that.
Okay. Now,
he brings our wedding in the house. So Tosfos mentioned the example where a person is going to the Sodor Gdolik
Moilin Nisurin,
on Shabbos, let's say it could happen, or on Rosh Chodesh, or any day when you have Musaf.
Yeah,
I mean, the wedding itself can't take place on Shabbos, but the wedding party can take place on Shabbos, no. In fact, in the old days, it used to be very common. People would get married on Friday, and then the Friday night Sodor would double as the wedding meal. People were poor. They couldn't afford a separate Sodor during the week, so then it was very common to do that.
The Sodor Shabbos would
also double as the Sodor of the wedding. Yeah. Yeah, you find many tefillahs.
Yeah, Friday night.
Okay, but same difference. You know, but the point is you could have. Fine. The point is you could have a shalosh shudis, which also serves as a wedding meal. Okay, fine. Okay. So the Gemara tells Rav Zeira ki abicholish migirsei. Rav Zeira, when there would come a point when he was tired from his learning, have also the yosef apischa the bear of Nosson Bar Tuvi. He would go sit by the door of the house of Rav Nosson Bar Tuvi, because Chachamim would be coming in and out of there. Omar, he says to himself, Kichalfi Rabbanon, when the Rabbanon passed by, Tamidim, who are coming in and out of Rav Nosson's house, Oz Eikum Mikamayhu, then I will stand up in honor of them, to stand up for Tamid Chacham, Bnei Sefer Torkum, the Akabal Agra, and that way I'll receive reward from Hashem for it. So in other words, you can see, by the way, it was less tiring to get up and down than it was to learn Torah. You understand how much they participate in Torah. But what does it mean he's going to receive rewards? Since when do you do mitzvahs for rewards? So there's an interesting idea that the Bnei Yisoscha brings on it. The Pasuk says, Bnei Sefer Torkum, Vodat Bnei Zachin, V'yareisa Me'alakecha. And one meaning of that is that if you stand up for an older person, for a Talmud Chacham, whatever, then the reward will be Yiras Shemayim. So therefore, Rav Zeira wants that reward. Not a reward, B'gashmir. He wants that kind of reward. Yeah.
The thing is that he's tired because he's the older person, right?
Could be. I don't know.
Or a bit up and down.
Yeah, okay. Maybe because, yeah, okay. Okay. So, Nothik Osir of Nothin Baturvi, sort of Nothin Baturvi himself, the Rosh Hashiva comes out, Amale, and Rav Zeira asked him, Man Omar Halacha Bei Medrasha, which of the Bnei Yeshiva said in the Beis Medrash that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, in what we're talking about over here, about the time of Musaf? So he said, no, on the contrary, this is what Rabbi Yechanan said, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda had said, first you daven musaf, then mincha, because musaf's time is soon going to be over, and mincha not. So Rabbi Yechanan, in fact, said the halacha is not like, Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei Rabbi Yechanan Amra, so Rabbi Yehuda says Rabbi Yechanan really said that. Amalei Aim, so Rabbi Nosson Batruvi tells him yes. Tonimine aboin zimni. Rav Zeira learned it from him 40 times. He repeated it over 40 times so that it would be fixed in his brain. Amalei, sort of Nosson Bar Tuvi, asked him, you seem to be very into this particular halacha. So why is it? Chada hilach or chadas hilach? Is it the one unique thing? You've never learned anything from Rav Yechanan, and this is the first thing you've learned from Rav Yechanan, so therefore you're very excited about it, and you want to make sure you remember it. Or chadas hilach, is it new to you that you knew many things from Rav Yechanan before, but this particular halacha, you didn't know Rav Yechanan had said, you thought somebody else said it? He says the second one, it's new to me. All this time I had a topic, was it Rabbi Yechanan or was it Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi who had said this to him? Now that you told me it's Rabbi Yechanan, I wanted to learn it from you over and over so that I know for sure, so I never have that topic again and think that it was Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. 40 times. Yeah, Tzlach has a long explanation, a long, complicated explanation why it was so important to him based on Udi or Gemaris and Aristotle, whatever. We're not going to do that. Okay. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if a person davens, or did Rabbi Yehuda, as the Gersa, as the Rif brings, that given that Rabbi Yehuda says you're not supposed to daven, you can't daven Musaf after 7 hours, even the Chachamim who say you can daven the whole day, they agree, as we said before, that a person is called Pesheya if he doesn't label them that. So anybody who does it after 7 hours, all of Akosav Omer about such a person, the Pasuk says, Nuge mi moyed osafti mi nechoy. There's a lot of different meanings what the Pasuk means. The Nuge is Meloshin Yogain, there's sorrow, or Meloshin Rashi, and the Pasuk translates it, Meloshin removing. But the Gemara is going to translate it over here that Nuge means breaking. Mi moyed, because they missed the proper time, osafti, I have gathered. Or removed, asafti can also mean removed, like passed away, like by Yosef Alamov, mimechoyu from the ones that were from you. So a person who does Musaf after 7 hours, the Pasuk is saying that he's going to be broken. My mashma da'ai nuge lishnid tabrahu, where do we see that the word nuge is associated with breaking? Can the Targum, Rabbi Yosef, the answer is like Rabbi Yosef teaches the Pasuk, you have it in Targum over there, Tavra Osi al Son Ehen, the basic throw, breakage will come on the enemies of the Jewish people, which of course is the most usual euphemism for the Jewish people themselves, al the Echru Zimne Mayadaya de Yerushalayim, because they delayed the fixed times of the Mayadim in Yerushalayim. In other words, they didn't bring the Korbanos in the right times, and so the same thing, we're saying that the person misses saying Musaf in the right time, then it's the same kind of thing. The Tosfos points out, it can't be talking about missing the times of the Korbanos, because there's no such thing as doing them later. You either do them on that day or you don't do them at all. So it must be talking about the Tefillah Samos often, which corresponds to the Korban Musaf, that they're doing it later than they're supposed to.
They need to mean, or
people do it. Anybody in? Yeah.
No, they don't. They have to themselves after the Korban Musaf with
Makkah. No, so in other words, we're saying that anybody who delays Musaf past the time when they're supposed to is the subject of this Pasuk, that there's going to be breakage coming on him because he delayed the proper time of the Tefillah of Musaf, which corresponds to the Korban. In the same vein, by the same token, anybody who davens Shachos after 4 hours in the day, all of our Kosev Omer, Nugi Mimoda Safkin Mechoyu. My mashma dai nuge lishnid tsarahu. Where do we see, on the other hand, where do we see that the word nuge, now before we translated nuge as meaning breaking, where do we see that it can also mean tsar? Dichtiv, dofa nafshi mituga, as the Pasuk says, the Pasuk can kill him, my neshama is dripping away from sorrow. So we see that tuga is the same shortish, therefore with nuge. Rav Nachman is chacham mehocha, but still it's saying nuge is vihimar la. Similarly, you have a Pasuk in Eicha that mentions that the young women of Yerushalayim are nugos, they're sorrowful, they're sad because of the Churban and the Golus, the Himar Lo on Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim herself feels better. So I'm not in yoga again.
4 hours or 7 hours?
So 4 hours for Shachar, 7 for Musaf. But Marsha points out, when it came to Musaf, we use the word of breaking, because there's no tashlumin for it. You miss Musaf, there's no making up for it with another tefillah. As opposed to, you miss the time of Shachris in principle. Okay, you can daven a tefillah nedava, you can daven a makeup tefillah by mincha, as we learned at the beginning of the parak. Also, he says, the vote is, when it comes to the actual korbanos that they represent, the korban, a person, you miss the korban Musaf, you miss something very important that brings important kapara for the Jewish people. Part of the Musaf is korban chatas, that's machapa for people who came into the Beis Mikdash when they were Tameh. That's a very important thing. You miss that, and that's why it uses the lashon of breaking. As opposed to, you talk about a person misses Shachris, which corresponds to the Korban Talmud, isn't it? Okay, the Korban Talmud is meant to be a kapara, but it's for it. It's Korban Ola, it's a different level of kapara than a chala. So therefore, it's like not as serious, so to speak, and therefore the Pasuk just talks about sadness rather than, therefore we translate it for the word nuge, and the Pasuk is sad rather than break.
When it comes to the 4 hours a day, is that similar to what we have now, Mount Tefillah?
Yeah, that's when we say when you see on the calendar. So it's Mount Tefillah, that's what it refers to. Continue thinking about it. Rav Ivya Cholosh, Rav Ivya one time was not feeling well, but it also appeared to Rav Yosef. He didn't come to the Shabbos drosha of Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was the Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedisa. Shabbos, before Musaf, he would give a drosha, like we have nowadays in many shuls. And then after that they would go. Rashi describes they would have the drosha in the Beis Medrash, and then they would go from the Beis Medrash to shul and daven Musaf. But Rav Ivya didn't show up. So the next day when he came to Beit Midrash, Abaya wanted to make Rabbi Yosef feel better. Abaya wanted that Rabbi Yosef shouldn't be insulted, that Rabbi Yosef didn't show up as if like he doesn't care for Rabbi Yosef's drasha. So he asked him, my time, Rabbi Yosef, why didn't you come yesterday to the pirka, to the drasha? So he said, because I was weak, my heart was weak, and I couldn't make it. So Abaya tells him, so why don't you first eat something a little bit and then come to the drasha? So Rabbi Yehuda tells him, don't you, Abaya, agree with what Rav Huna said? You're not allowed to eat something before Musaf, so I couldn't eat, so therefore I couldn't come. So Abaya tells him, but you still could have davened Musaf v'yachid at home, v'litad midi, then you make Kiddush and you eat something with Lameisi, and then you can come to the Darasha. So Rabbi Yehuda tells him, what about this that Rabbi Yechanan said, a person is not allowed to daven earlier than the tzibur, because it looks like he's saying like the tzibur's tefillah is not important. Abaya answers him, don't you know that was said about that? That's talking about if the person is in shul with the tzibur, he shouldn't be going and diving ahead of the rest of the tzibur. But here you're talking about you were at home, so therefore it wouldn't have mattered. So the bottom line is Abaya told him you would have had, next time, if this happened, you'll know you have an alternative. Daven Musaf at home, then you can make Kiddush, eat something, and then you'll come to the Drasha. The Gemara says, V'lech silch saloik Rav Huna, v'loik Rav Yishuv ben Levi. Now actually, the halacha is not like Rav Huna, and not like Rav Yishuv ben Levi. Rav Huna ha'damar, and Rav Huna is what we just said. Rav Huna had said you're not allowed to eat before Musaf. The halacha is not in fact like that. You are allowed to eat before Musaf. Now you're not allowed to eat very much. What it says in Shulchan Aruch is you can make kiddush before Musaf, and you can have a little bit of something. You can have up to and including a kezayis of bread, and you can have fruit and whatever, and then but not more than that. And then you have to have Musaf. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, in what sense is the halacha not like Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi? The Amar Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, kiven shiyegiyas man filach mincha, also lo adam shiyitan klum kodem shiyfal tzol mincha. He says when it comes time for mincha, and you have machloek as a poskim, whether it means mincha gdolo or mincha kana, then you're not allowed to taste anything before mincha. The halacha is not like him. The halacha is, again, you're not allowed to have a suda. And there you have machloek. Do we mean a big suda, like a wedding suda or whatever? Do we mean even a regular sit-down meal or whatever? But the point is that you're not allowed to before mincha, but you are allowed to taste something. And again, you're allowed to eat like a kibbutz of bread or other such things or whatever before mincha, not like Rabbi Shimon maybe.
To make you strong when you
daven. Neither to make you strong when you daven, or just not even just because you're allowed to. Because mincha is, you're not allowed to sit down to a whole meal, because then you're going to get involved in it. You're going to forget about mincha, but a snack you're allowed to. Okay. Mishnah says, Rav Nechunya ben Akana, how he mispal b'knisah to the Beis Medrash, or b'tziyat his tefillah sara. Rav Nechunya ben Akana, when he would go into the Beis Medrash, and when he would leave it, he would say each time a short tefillah. By the way, what's this Mishnah doing over here when we're in the middle of talking about Shemoneh Esrei? It says in Shulchan Aruch that after a person davens, he should right away go to learn Torah. We just asked Hashem in davening to give us the brains to be able to learn, the same with the Bein of Dina, etc. So therefore, right after that, a person should be sitting and learning something.
Even if he learns before davening.
That's learning before davening or something else. That's to prepare himself for davening.
Does he have to?
It's not an abstract. It's not a requirement. It's in Shulchan Aruch, it recommends that's the proper way to do it. So Rav Nechunya ben Akana would daven this tefillah when he goes into the Beis Medrash when he comes out. So the other Chachamim asked him, what's the point of this tefillah? What exactly are you davening about? When I go into the Beis Medrash, I'm davening that there shouldn't be a stumbling block because of me. In other words, that I shouldn't pass in halacha wrongly, for example, and then people are going to follow me. Talking about learning. When he's going into the Beis Medrash, he's davening ahead of going into the Beis Medrash. He's going to be learning. He's going to be teaching Torah. He doesn't want that. He's going to say the wrong thing, and people are, and when I'm leaving the Beis Medrash, I thank Hashem that he made me able to be a Talmid Chacham, that he gave my portion in life to be able to learn Torah. So we're going to expand on that. Turn up on him, because he saw say mahu. I mean, what does a person say when he's going into the Beis Medrash to learn? That there shouldn't be any stumbling through me, like we said, he shouldn't pass in wrongly. I shouldn't stumble in a matter of halacha. I shouldn't make a mistake in a matter of halacha, the yisbuch will be chaver, right? And then my friends would be happy about me because, in other words, they're going to be happy that we have an advantage over him. He said the wrong thing and we were able to correct him, right? So I don't want that because then it's going to be two things, because then it's going to cause, because of that, they're going to be punished minashamayim for being happy about me. That's Rashi's explanation. Marashos has a different explanation, but these are two different things. Number one, v'lay a kosher b'dvar halacha. I don't want to stumble in a matter of halacha. And number two, a positive thing. I want that there should be v'yismuchu b'chaveray. My friends should be able to be happy with me that we're learning Torah together. They should be satisfied with what I'm saying and appreciate it. V'lay omer al tome toher v'lay al toher tome. I shouldn't mistakenly say that something that's tome is really toher. That's toher, or that something that's really toher is tome. And that my friends, my colleagues in the Beth Medrash shouldn't make a mistake in a matter of halacha, and I would be happy about them, which also is no good. Or again, according to Marsha, it means the other way around. They shouldn't stumble in a matter of halacha, and I should be able to be happy with them, that I should be able to appreciate them. So that was a tefillah before. That was a tefillah beforehand. What does he say when he's leaving the Beth Medrash? We say this by a siyum, that you made my place among those who sit in the Beth Medrash. You did not make my portion among those who sit on the corners. What is Yoshev Kronos? Rashi gives two explanations. It doesn't necessarily mean later gays. Rashi says one explanation means storekeepers who have their stores on the corners. And the other explanation means Amir Ores who are just sitting and talking sound. But either way, I'm not part of them. I get up early and they get up early. But the difference is I'm getting up for Divrei Torah early. For Divrei Torah, they're getting up for useless things. We say over there Yoshvei Kronos. We say Yoshvei Kronos. There is, by the way, there's an interesting thing. There's a letter from the Rebbe where he wrote to somebody named Hillman who came up with a notion that maybe the word over here is not supposed to be Kronos. Maybe it's Kuf, Resh, Vav, two ticks, Tof, and it stands for Kaukasios for Tauterios, which means circuses and theaters. So in that case, it would be referring to Goyim, who go to places of entertainment. The Rebbe writes in the whole letter, it's Shoyl of that for a number of reasons. So now it's talking, as we say over here, Yoshvei Kronos, like Rashi says, storekeepers or Amayaris. Okay. Ani omel v'hema melim, I'm working hard and they're working hard. Ani omel makabel skar, I work hard and I get a skar for it. V'hema melim v'ena makabel skar, they work hard but they don't get a skar for it. Now what do you mean? Obviously, for example, a storekeeper is not working for nothing, he wants to make a profit. There's a verse from the Chofetz Chaim, he says the difference is, a person who works in business, let's say, if he works hard but he doesn't actually manage to accomplish anything, he's not getting paid for it. You work on a job, let's say you're a tailor, he gives an example, you're supposed to sew a garment, you didn't sew it right, you're not getting paid. You put in dozens of hours of effort, and it doesn't matter, too bad. As opposed to with Torah, even if you do come up with the wrong conclusion, just the fact that you sat and learned Torah itself, you get tired of it. Ani Ross Behem Rossim, he continues in the tefillah, I run and they run. Ani Ross Bechaya Olam Abba Behem Rossim Lever Shachas, I run to the world, to the life of Olam Abba, and they're running off to Be'er Shachas, to Gehenna.
Well, it depends if they're just going Parnassah.
Well, obviously, we're not talking about doing it as a side thing for Parnassah, and they want to learn as much as possible. We're talking about, in other words, that their whole life is their business, like, or whatever. So, in fact, Rabbeinu Yonah says on this, the verse with this last line is, Ani Ros, Behem Ros, it means we're all running towards, eventually, we're all going to die. I realize that, and therefore, I spend time learning Torah. They don't pay attention to that, and therefore, they're just involved in their business, or their Sikha B'Tayla, or whatever. In this connection, we learn in a braisa. By the way, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you're supposed to say these tefillahs before and after you go and learn. Lamaisa, you don't see many people do that nowadays. Why that is, it's not so certain. When Rabbi Eliezer got sick, his Talmidim came to visit him, before he passed away. So they tell him, Rebbe, teach us the proper ways of life, so we should be zeicha to chayyeh olam haba. Number one, be careful with the kavod of your chaverim, which he actually says that in Pirkei Avos as well. It says each of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yechem and Zaka, it says three things over there. And Rabbi Eliezer's first one is, number two, he says, keep your children away from Higoyin. So what is Higoyin? There's a vast number of explanations what Higoyin is. Rashi over here says that it means don't get them used to learning too much Tanakh. because it's very absorbing. Tanakh is very fascinating and very interesting, and then they're not going to be learning the parts of Torah that they need to know in order to live as he is. That's the first explanation. The second explanation, Rashi says he goyin means childish talk, to keep them away from that. There's a vast number of other explanations of what he goyin means. It means a system of logic that the Greeks developed, so to sort of keep them away from that because you don't want them to get into logic and philosophy and whatnot. It means learning how to pronounce Hashem's name, the Yud Kei Vav Kei, many, 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 many.
Goyin and Higyan are the same.
The Higyan Libby, right. Vashivum ben Birkei Tamar Chachamim, make them sit between the knees of Tamar Chachamim to learn Torah. Which Marsha says, one meaning of this is, in other words, that you're saying that their childish learning is not so, we're saying don't get them too much into Mikra. So what do you do with them when they're still not of the age to be learning Mishnah and Gemara? Yes, still have them sit with the Tamar Chachamim and they'll be absorbing what they can over there. And number three, when you're davening, know before whom you're standing, that you're standing before Hashem. With that, you'll be zeicher to chayyam abba. The one point is, he's telling them about the three kavim, Torah, avoda, and melech chasadim. Torah about teaching your children, avoda about the mentality to have when davening, and melech chasadim, he's already b'chavod chavereichem. Uchshacholah Rav Yechon ben Zakkai. When Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai became sick before he passed away, also nichnas the Talmud of Levakroi, his Talmudim came to visit him. Kivin shara oisam his chalivkos. When he saw them, he started crying. Amrulay Talmudim, so Talmudim say to him, Nei Yisrael, light of the Jewish people, Amud Hayimini, the right hand pillar. Rashi explains there were two pillars in front of the Beit Mikdash, the right Yochan and Boaz, the right thing is always more important. So therefore, like they compared him to one of the pillars in front of the Beit Mikdash, and the right one, because the right is more important. Patish Achazak, the strong hammer, Mipnei Ma'at Abaycha, what are you crying? Why these three expressions? So again, there's a couple of different explanations. One of them is, Marsha says, Ner Yisrael for the mitzvahs that he did, because Ner mitzvah of a Torah Ur. Amud Hayimini for the Chachamim whose lives he saved at the time of the Korban, the famous thing where he says, Tash Vafionis to save the family of Rem Gamliel, and doctors for the Tzadik, etc. And Patish Achazak for the Torah that he taught. Torah compared to a hammer. So Mipnei Ma'at Abaycha, why are you crying? Amalahem, so he says, Ilu Lifnei Melech Vosav Adam Hayim Alichin Oisei, if they would bring me in front of a human king, Shayim Kanu Mocha Bakever, where after all a king is here today and tomorrow he's dead in the grave, and Shim Koyas Olai Ein Kase Kase Olam, if he gets angry at me, then it's not an anger forever, V'im Yisrani Ein Yisurei Yisur Olam, and if he puts me in jail, it's not forever, V'im Mimiseni Ein Misotim Yisat Olam, and if he kills me, it's even not forever, because I'm still going to come alive by Tehath HaMesim. V'ani Yochel L'Faisi B'dvarim, and a human king, I can always appease him with words, or L'Shachter B'Mammon, and I can bribe him with money. Even then, I would be crying, with fear of what's going to happen. V'achshav Shemelichim Oisi L'Shem Melech Malchem Lochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now I'm going to be brought in front of the King of Kings, Hashem, to Chai V'Kayim La'olam L'Olam L'Olam. He is alive and exists forever and forever. Shem Koyas Olai Kase Kase Olam. If he's angry at me, then it's a forever thing. The Maestrani Isuri Yisraelim, he puts me in jail, it's forever. The Mimisein Mimisotin Yisraelim, if he kills me, then it's forever. The Eini Yochel Afaisib Advarim Vilev Shachtim Mammon, and I can't appease him with words or bribe him with money. And that means primarily in Olam Haba. In Olam Hazeh, sure, a person can daven, a person can give tzedakah, and to a certain extent, that's sort of like bribing Hashem Kavyachol. But after a person passes away, he has none of that. They say about the famous thing, they say about the Vilna Gaon, I think it is, or about one of the other Chachamim of his times, that before he died, before he passed away, he took his tzitzis in his hands and he was crying, and he says, look at this, a mitzvah in this world you can buy for a couple of pennies in Olam Haba, where I'm about to go to. You can't get it for all the money in the world. The Veloy Ois. No, that's the point. They don't. They can't do mitzvahs. We learned in the third paragraph. That's why you're not supposed to have your tzitzis out by a Beis HaKvaret, because Loy Yigvarosh, and they're making fun of it. You know, that's what we're talking about, Mason Nuhun. Yeah. This world is to do mitzvahs, and the next world is to receive the reward. You enjoy. Yeah, you receive the schar. Okay. The loy oid, and not only that, says Rabbi Yechon and then that guy. Elish yesh lefonei shnei drachim. There are two roads ahead of me. Achas shogan eden v'achas shogehenim. The eni yedev the ezer melichim oisi. I don't know which one they're going to bring me on. Now, how you taught the lawyer, should I not be crying? Now, the obvious question is, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, he spent 80 years learning and teaching Torah. He saved the whole Jewish people by the Korban. He's afraid that he's going to go to Gehenna. What's going on over here? So there's a lot of explanations. Now, Shaw says that it could mean... We learned in the first paragraph. We said that Yaakov Avinu, for example, will look for David as a phrase, Shema Yigra Machet, after all, he may have done some Aveda that takes away many of his Kutim. Yeah, the finest thing by a Sadik. Or it could be, he says also, it may have been as a matter of Anivus in front of his Talmidim. He wants his Talmidim to, this is a lesson for his Talmidim that they should realize when their time themselves comes, that they should realize this kind of thing. Anyway, in Chassidus it talks about, you can find it in Lakuta Torah and in herself as Tevayikra, and it's brought in many other places in Chassidus after that, that what you can have is, you can have a person who, the Chassidus, he's wonderful. He learns Torah, he does mitzvahs, he does mitzvahs chassadim, the whole nine yards, but the Pnimius, deep down inside, he's a total no good thing. So Rabbi Yechanan Zakeh is now concerned about that. Now his whole life he's been working on avoda for the tzibur. He's been learning, teaching Torah, saving the Jewish people, etc. Now, right before he passes away, he's thinking to himself, but first, what is it inside, deep down inside, am I where I should be? And therefore, meaning, in other words, that you can have that a person, the pnimius, that inside, that is esem. I don't know what it means in practice, but it means that a person can have that his esem is total ra, and on the outside, he puts on a good show in front of everybody. It's not jayza, obviously, but still, you know, you have to be concerned. In that case, if there's ra inside him, then it has to be cleaned up in Gehenna. So he's concerned about that. I once saw an interesting explanation also that it has to do with, we know in the famous story in Gittin over there that he says to Aspasionis, ask me whatever you want, I'll give you, because you brought Aspasionis the good news that he's going to be the emperor. And Rabbi Yechon Zakeh asked him for Yavne v'chachameha and the family of Ram Gamliel and doctors for the subject. And the Gemara says over there, how you talking? He didn't ask that he should spare your shalayim and the mikdash. And then the Gemara says over there, okay, maybe Rabbi Yechon Zakeh thought, you know, you ask for too much, you're not going to get anything. So they say, therefore, that maybe Rabbi Yechon Zakeh now is second-guessing himself on that. Did I have to make the right decision? Should I maybe have asked for that? So they say to him, Rebbe, give us a bracha before you pass away. Amalam, he says to them, Yirotin Shehem Mora Shemayim Aleichem Kemora Bas of Adam. It may be Hashem's will that you should have as much Yirot Shemayim as you have fear of people. Amalam, come in, Ad Khan. Is that it? You're supposed to have more Yirot Shemayim than you have Yirot of people. Halavai, you should have at least as much. Kedu, after all, you seek. Shaladim over Avera, Omer, Shalayirani Adam. After all, when a person does an Avera, often they say, I don't want people to see me, but he's not so afraid about Hashem seeing him. For example, the famous thing about a Ganav, right, that a Ganav has to pay more than a Gazlan for that reason, because a Ganav is afraid of people and not of Hashem, whereas a Gazlan isn't afraid of either. So in a way, a Gazlan is a greater Madurega than a Ganav. Okay. Before Rabbi Yechanan Zakeh passed away, he says to his Talmidim, "Panu kelim mitnei truma, remove all the kelim from the house because of the truma, because otherwise they're all going to become tamei. V'hochinu kisei l'chizkiyahu melech Yehuda Shabbah, and prepare a chair for Chizkiyahu who's coming to greet my neshama and escort it to Shemayim. Why Chizkiyahu? So Rabbi Sadia Goyen says because Rabbi Yechanan Zakeh is descended from Chizkiyahu, so therefore it's his ancestor. And there's a lot of other explanations. He spread Torah among the Jewish people in his time, just like Chizkiyahu did in his time. And there's an interesting explanation that Chizkiyahu, we know, successfully defied Sancheiriv, when Sancheiriv was about to conquer Yerushalayim, and a nest happened, and the whole Sancheiriv army was destroyed outside of Yerushalayim. Mashayim, then what happens? Rabbi Yechon Zakeh in his time didn't defy Yad Biryonim in his time, who were defying the Romans and saying, let's fight against them. And meanwhile, Rabbi Yechon Zakeh goes out and makes peace with them, and wanted to begin with, and he goes out and then convinces Aspasionis to spare Yavne and whatever. So he's stressing to his Talmidim, don't think, for example, that Chizkiyahu's way was right and mine was wrong. You should realize that what I did in my time is just as important and just as great as what Chizkiyahu did in his time. He did in his time what was necessary to save the Jewish people from Sancheiriv, and I did in my time what was necessary to save the Jewish people from Aspasianus.
Both ways
are
valid.
Both each way is valid, each in its own time and its own place. Yeah. Mishnah says, Ram Gamliel Oymah, B'chol Yom V'Yom Mispal Adam Shemana Esrei. Every day a person has to daven the entire Shemana Esrei, all full 18 brachas, or as we'll see in the Gemara, 19 nowadays. Rabbi Yeshua, I'm a me'ein yuchetz. Rabbi Yeshua says you don't have to daven the whole Shemana Esrei. You can daven me'ein Shemana Esrei, which is you daven the Havineinu, which we'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow. That you have the first three brachas, one paragraph in the middle that summarizes the middle 13, the middle 12 or 13, and then three brachas at the end. Rabbi Akiva says it depends. Im shgurat philosophy b'siv, if a person knows the words of davening and he's able to say it fluently, mispal yudches, then he davens the whole 18 brachas. V'im lav me'en yudches, if he doesn't know it so fluently, then he can get away with davening. They didn't have to do it, exactly right. Rabbi Eliezer says if a person makes his tefillah a fixed thing, which we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow, Beis Hashem, what that means, but basically, like, he makes it just like a fixed thing, like, I just have to do it and get it over with, then his tefillah is not what it should be. His tefillah is supposed to be tachanunim, it's pleading with Hashem to help him. Rabbi Yeshua, if a person is traveling in a dangerous place, then because he can't concentrate on Shemana Esrei at all, then he doesn't even daven Shemana Esrei at that point. He davens a short tefillah. But Omer, what he says is, Hosha Hashem of Amchas Sheiris Yisrael, Hashem, save your people, the remnant of the Jewish people. B'chol parsha te'ibru yir tzorcheyem l'konecha. In all parsha te'ibru, we'll see in the Gemara what that means, their need should be before you. The Gemara is going to explain that parsha te'ibru means even if they're doing Averis, Ibru Miloshin Averis. Even so, yir tzorcheyem l'konecha, their need should be before you. Baruch atah Hashem shemeach tefillah. That's the tefillah tzorah. Yeah, we'll see in the Gemara, we'll talk about tomorrow, that doesn't completely substitute for Shemana Esrei. The person still, if he gets to a safe place, when it's still time to daven, he still has to daven properly Shemana Esrei. No, it's not Havinenu, as opposed to Havinenu stands instead of Shemana Esrei. When a person says Havinenu, then he doesn't have to daven that, then he's potter from that to Shemana Esrei, as opposed to this doesn't, right? We'll see in the Gemara, we'll discuss that tomorrow. A person is riding on a donkey when it comes time to Shemana Esrei. You have to get off the donkey and stand there. You should get off the donkey and down. If he can't get off the donkey, for example, he has nobody to hold on to it for him, then he should at least turn his face in the direction of Yerushalayim while he's sitting on the donkey. If he can't even turn his face in that direction, then he should just have in mind that his heart is facing towards the Kodesh HaKodesh. Similarly, if a person is traveling on a ship, or he's in an after, Rashi has two explanations. One is that an after is a kind of thing that's called stocks in English, where they would put prisoners, they would have like iron or wooden blocks that would be around the person's feet, so he can't move. So therefore, he can't get up and daven Shemana Esrei. Rashi's second explanation of after is a raft. He's on a raft in the river or whatever, and he can't turn around in whatever direction. He has to stand still, so the raft doesn't tip over. Then also, you have this libik, and it's based on Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then also, you should just have in mind mentally that he's davening towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim because he can't turn around. Nowadays, you have a similar thing when you're on an airplane. If you can't always daven in the direction of your shalayim, especially if the airplane is turning this way or that. So, yeah. So the Gemara, Hani Yud Ches Kenegim. We say there's 18 brachas of Shemana Esrei. What does it correspond to? Now, why do we have to know? Why 18? Because it happened. They had 18. Pnei Yeshua explains, the vote is, the Gemara is going to explain later on in the Perek, that really, by rights, there have to be limits of how much we can praise Hashem. That's why, for example, in the beginning of Shemana Esrei, we only say, okay, like God, like Gibor Vaner. We don't say any more than that, and even those, we only say, because Moshe Rabbeinu said. So where did the Chachamim get the idea that we should have as many as 18 brachas? Maybe we shouldn't be praising Hashem that much, because it makes it look like these are the only things to praise Hashem for. So where did they get 18 from? Amr of Hillel Breda of Shmuel Nachmeni, Keneged Yurches at Koris, Shomer David, Behovel Hashem B'nei Eilim. There's 18 times it says Hashem's name in the capital Chop Tesset Tillim, Hovel Hashem B'nei Eilim. Rashi points out the connection of that with Shemana Esrei is from that capital, Hovel Hashem B'nei Eilim, Hovel Hashem Kavod Ba'oz, Hovel Hashem Kavod Shmai. From there we learn the themes of the first three brachas of Shemana Esrei. B'nei Eilim, the sons of the powerful, refers to the Ovos. Kavod Ba'oz, the strength of Hashem, is Gvoros. And the Hovel Hashem Kavod Shmai is Atta Kodesh. So from there we learn the themes of the first three brachas. So therefore that capital has to do with Shemana Esrei. So 18 times, and there it says Hashem's name, therefore 18 brachas. Rav Yosef Amar, can I give you the Kodesh Shabbat Krishma? Correspond to the 18 times that it says Hashem's name in Krishma. It corresponds to the 18 choyas, the 18 vertebrae that are in the human spine. Depending how you count them, you have more or less than 18. The total number, including the neck and everything, is around 30-something. But if you don't count, the ones in the neck don't count. Those the Mishnah and all those list separately. So if you count, because those are counted as something separate. When the Mishnah and all those list the bones in the human skeleton, it lists the ones in the neck separately. So therefore, what you have?
Still 17 on
it. Yeah, so one way of looking at it is you have 12 in the main part of the spine, and then 5 below it. So one thing is there's a book on medicine in the Gemara written by a Frum doctor in Germany in the early 1900s. He points out that sometimes in tall people you sometimes have an extra 6th vertebra down there. So therefore, you can have 18. It could be that in times of the Gemara more people were tall like that, and therefore 18 was the regular number. Another possibility is maybe it's counting one of the vertebrae of the neck along with it. You have 1 from the neck and 12 from the main part of the spine and 5 below it, whatever, one way or the other, you can count 18. Okay. When you bow down, by Shemana Esrei, you have to bow down until all the vertebrae in the spine stick out. Like you can see them sticking out. Ula says you have to bow enough that he'll see an Iser in front of his heart. What does that mean? Rashi explains he bows down enough that, like, there's a fold of flesh on his chest. That with there's a fold of flesh over there with an Iser sized piece of flesh between them. That means bowing down a lot. That means the Rambam describes it that he bows kikeshes, like a bow, bow down, yeah. Another explanation from Rishonim that Iser Keneged Libe means that if there were to be an Iser on the ground in front of him, that he would be able to see it. Which for one thing means that it means you don't just bow your back, you also bow your head. Okay. Rav Chanina Omer, Kivin Shinina Rosh Yeshuva Nitzorich. Rav Chanina says, no, once you nodded your head, once you bowed your head a little bit, you don't need anything more. Omer Rav, Behudim, Tzar Nafshe, that only applies when the person is troubling himself. Umechli, Commander Kore, he looks like he's bowing. In other words, you can see he wants to bow, but he has a bad back or whatever, and he can't bow, like we said, until the vertebrae stick out or whatever, then just bending his head is enough. But otherwise, a person has to bow the proper amount. Let's finish up over here. Hanitzmani, so it chastely happened. The question is, what do you mean you have 18 brachas each one after? You have 19. Omer of Levi, Birkas HaTzdukim, the Yavne Tiknua. The Birkas HaTzdukim, Birkas HaMinim, really, is supposed to be the bracha, but Lamal Shinim, they set that up in Yavne. So originally there were 18, but later on they added a 19. Keneged mi tiknua. Now we said there's 18 brachas each one after, we said they correspond to various things. So where do we get the 19th one from? Omer of Levi, Lirab Hilo Breder Shmova Nachmeni, Geneged Kela Kovet Ir. Here. Because in Kapitel Choftes, besides you have 18 times the name Havaya, you have also another name of Hashem, Kael HaKavod Hirim. That's also a name of Hashem. So therefore, you have a 19. Okay, it means the Hashem, the glorious Hashem, Hirim, made a loud noise, like to frighten the goyim or whatever. So therefore, that's appropriate for Birkas HaMinim. We were asking Hashem to destroy the Rishon. Lut of Yosef, according to Yosef, who says it corresponds to the names of Hashem and Kriyishma, Keneged Echad Shiva Kriyishma. So it corresponds. So you have Hashem Echad and Kriyishma. Echad is also a designation of Hashem. And especially, in fact, it's appropriate for the Birkas HaMinim, because the Minim are the ones who are claiming that there's more than one Hashem. So Echad corresponds very nicely to the Brach. It corresponds to the tiny little vertebra in the Shedra. You have, besides the big 18, you have a small 19th one, which many of them, Mephoshim say, refers to the Etzem Luz. The Etzem Luz is one opinion is what the body is going to be built out of by Tchias HaNeisim. The Minim don't believe in Tchias HaNeisim. So therefore, that extra bone is very appropriate to correspond to the bracha where we're asking Hashem to get rid of them. Okay, and tomorrow we'll learn about the story of how that bracha was established.